Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time for a No Sleep Teal rejoiner, is what we're calling this episode. Evan Ryer, it's been a while since gotten together. Yeah, in the words of Stain, it's been a minute since we've gotten together here on the channel, but you know, kind of wanted to let things sort of play out, understanding that it was such a disappointing season for the Jacksonville Jaguars, anticipated change. Perhaps on multiple levels. It started that way initially with Doug Peterson being relieved of his duties as head coach of the Jaguars. Then we went into this hiring process for his successor thinking Trent Baalke still going to be around. But we get about 10 interviews deep into this thing, I guess, and Baalke is then moving on from his role as general manager, becomes a really Shad Khan production, I would say, although we know now, and we anticipated during the process, Tony Boselli being a part of this as well and screening candidates and helping maybe Jacksonville get back and circle back on Liam Cohen. So many moving pieces we need to get to today, Evan, but initially anyway, are you happy at least that we're here, that we're at this point in terms of GM, head coach, and those dynamics moving forward?
You know, I definitely like Cohen as a offensive mind. I mean, you look at his track record, what he's done with the Bucs over the past couple of years since he joined that organization. Definitely, a positive hire when you think about the identity of this offense, what he was able to do with Baker Mayfield, potentially being able to translate that to Trevor. Although, as we've talked about before, it does concern me a little bit. You know, Baker, he's not a perfect quarterback, but he's got that it factor. He's got that, you know, edge to him. You know, we need to see that develop in Trevor if we want Cohen, I think, to actualize this offense properly. But overall, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider the personnel that the Jaguars currently possess. Think about the two running back attack in Tampa. You know, you could definitely see him getting a lot out of Etienne and Bigsby this upcoming season. The process is a little bit of a joke to me. You know, I can't say, I mean, you go look at Adam Schefter, there was an anonymous source that provided, he's like, I've never seen anything like this. this is unorthodox to say the least, but overall, I am relatively happy to move on from Baalke, and I'm relatively happy with Cohen as the pick.
Yeah, it was kind of the bumblebee approach. Yeah. It wasn't the straight line approach. It went a little bit like this, but we are here. I hear you. We'll start with Liam Cohen and kind of what we think he brings to the table. Obviously, this is kind of a fork in the road situation with this point, at this point with Trevor Lawrence. I don't think there's any other way to say it. If it doesn't work now, and understanding Trevor's health is going to play into that, something he hasn't been able to sustain the last couple of years. But if he's healthy for the most part, and you're thinking, too, that Cohen and his offense should help Trevor even in that regard, because I said it throughout the season. I think you got a Ryan Tannehill, Trevor, a little bit. And that's what Liam Cohen's offense, I think, will do. I don't think it'll be completely Tennessee Titans-like. I don't think it's going to be Arthur Smith, although the physical resemblances there between Liam Cohen and Arthur Smith are a little uncanny, but you know, I felt better after the press conference, too. And by the way, I didn't really care about the Duval thing. I know that got a lot of run. I think within the fan base, the fans are pretty delighted with this hire after hearing from Liam Cohen on that big stage yesterday. I don't think in terms of meme history that will come close still to stole the show. I think she's safe. I think our favorite is safe there on that Mount Rushmore of Jaguar memes. But yeah, in terms of what he brings to the table, I love the run game numbers for the Bucs more than probably anything else. I don't need another quarterback whisper. I don't need another West Coast offense, put it all on Trevor, you know, and those type of things. I like this approach that Liam Cohen's going to bring to the offensive side of the ball. I think it helps Trevor. I think it helps that defense. And your point about the running backs, I think that's interesting too, because is Travis Etienne really maybe a great fit for what Liam Cohen wants to do? I know you want to have that sort of two-back tandem that complements each other. I think Tank Bigsby is a big winner in all this. I think he could potentially thrive in this offense under Liam Cohen. But I think Cohen hit on it too. Lines of scrimmage have to be addressed with an emphasis on the offensive side of the ball, which leads you to wonder, what's that going to look like for 2025? You know, thinking that the tackles are pretty much set, but maybe the interior of that offensive line could look different, Evan.
Well, you know, a big sign that it could change is, you know who probably is benefiting the most slash most excited about this when you talk about lines of a scrimmage? Luke Fortner.
Absolutely.
Because Liam Cohen,
Cohen's offense at Kentucky basically, I think, got Fortner drafted where he got drafted, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a lifeline for Luke Fortner's career in Jacksonville. I mean, really. It's hard to imagine him not, you know, at least being on the squad. You know, I would say going, if we had gone a different route, there's a chance that, you know, they might, you know, cut Luke Fortner loose, just roll with Mitch Morse or roll with, you know, somebody else. But with this in mind, I would not be surprised to see him actually starting at the beginning of the year. You know, this is very far away out, but I think that's very much on the table. I think the offensive line, you probably won't see much changing. I think the defensive line is where, if you saw things kind of getting flipped around, maybe some guys that you would have typically expected to stick around, maybe getting out of there. I could see that happening, but we also see, have to see what kind of staff Liam Cohen can build in Jacksonville. I know right now they're kind of deciding on which guys to bring back from that previous staff. There's already, I know, one or two names that appear to be coming back. I mean, I think it, you're right though. While the rushing attack, you know, you can talk about the tandem, you can talk about the guys taking the handoffs. It's still, you know, you got to be able to block. And I would say that, you know, Cohen and the offensive staff at Tampa did a pretty good job. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would say that Tampa's offensive line is definitely, I would say, of a higher quality than what the Jags posted last year, but I wouldn't say it was an elite group. I would say they overachieved. So maybe they can do the same with who they've got in Jacksonville or who they're going to decide to bring in. I think with Bigsby is going to take that Bucky Irving role, you know, ideally. He's kind of going to be your lead guy. And then, you know, ETN can kind of do the Rashad White stuff. You know, he can, you know, be a little bit more of just a receiving back. But you never know. I mean, you know, we've got a long way ahead of us this offseason. ETN's going to be in a really, really important year in terms of getting paid. You know, this is his chance. So that's good motivation. But in terms of actually, you know, making it happen, like I said, it's going to be a there's going to be a lot of steps in this process before we really get to know what the identity looks like.
Yeah, I mean, Liam Cohen is a name that might sound like your PGA Tour Rookie of the Year more than a head football coach, but he does talk a lot about physicality.
Oh, yeah.
As a non-negotiable and with an emphasis on the offensive line. Yes, Luke Fortner was a standout at Kentucky under Liam Cohen. We know, though, that relationships only go so far when you get to the National Football League. Obviously, it's not a bad thing for Luke Fortner that Liam Cohen is now the head coach of the Jags. But I liked even his first stint at Kentucky when he had Christian Rodriguez, Smoke Cavassier in that backfield. And then Will Levis, you know, he took on Will Levis. And when you look at Levis's two seasons at Kentucky, it was clearly a better 2021 under Liam Cohen with Rodriguez in that run game than it was in, say, when he circled back in 2023 and didn't have had Devin Leary, I think, at the quarterback position a couple of seasons ago. But the Jags now, we wonder about the sort of power dynamic, Evan, with Trent Baalke out as the general manager. We do know, based on comments from both Tony Boselli here locally and then from Shad Khan at the press conference on Monday, that Bo is basically in line for a front office role. And I'm guessing it's not as an advisor. I'm guessing that executive VP title that's been thrown around would certainly be in play. Your thoughts on maybe the dynamic of the power structure moving forward?
I mean, I definitely like the idea of Boselli being in a high up role. I definitely don't want him as GM. I know that that's a big point of conversation and really has been over, you know, the past year as people, you know, try and figure out, you know, is Baalke sticking around or not. I would love him as like a VP of player personnel or something like that. I think it makes sense. I like the idea of having a tandem, maybe a guy that doesn't know the organization as well, but is just really, really good at, drafting at you know, making deals, all that different stuff. And then having Boselli, who's maybe not as versed at that, but knows this organization inside and out. I like the idea of them working together. I wouldn't be surprised if they go that route, if it is kind of a tandem situation where Boselli's almost GM kind of thing. If they go for a guy that Cohen really wants, you know what I mean? Because in that situation, you would have a guy that in Boselli that Shad Khan feels really comfortable with, and then you would have a guy that's in Cohen's corner as well. I think that could work. The only problem is, we talked about this before, even with the staff and the Jaguars, something that Balke and Peterson did was it did kind of feel like there were maybe too many people involved, you know what I mean? Too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak. That is the only concern I have, is when you have a bunch of different dudes, all with different perspectives, that can either be a major asset or it can be a major kind of distraction or, red tape, getting in the way of, doing what really matters.
I don't mind the one voice type of approach when it comes to the structure of the front office. I didn't really mind it with Trent Baalke kind of being that guy, the end of the road, so to speak, when it came to everything football related to the Jaguars. I hear you if you have sort of this executive VP, general manager situation. And then I'm going to guess you've told Liam Cohen. He's certainly going to have a very strong voice as it
Absolutely.
relates to personnel. So that's where you do have concerns, perhaps. But, I would think too, a lot of this has been laid out, you would hope, with Shad and going through this process. I would think it was discussions like the one we're speculating about that led to Trent Baalke moving on altogether. Because I know it's been sort of reported or believed that Trent Baalke was let go, but it also wouldn't surprise me if Shad, going through this process, came to the decision that, look, whether it's the head coach and or the next general manager to go along with maybe Bo in a role, we're going to have multiple guys with voices that resonate. It's not just going to be Trent Baalke moving forward. Trent Baalke's old school too. I could see a scenario where that's presented to him and Trent says, you know what? This is probably the point where we need to go our separate ways. I would say mutually agreed upon might be a scenario I could see more with Trent's departure than just a straight up Trent, we're letting you go, or even Trent just saying, I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we probably won't learn for maybe even years about how this went down, but I could definitely see a scenario where maybe Shad, in the process of these interviews, was like, Trent, look, these guys clearly don't want you just as the solo dude. Maybe we have somebody that basically has the same amount of voice power as you. Would you be willing to do that? And they didn't come to terms on that. I could see that as a thing. I did hear, I remember, on Twitter and other places, people saying, well, maybe Balke goes through the draft. He just, and then they kind of move forward.
No.
I'm glad that they didn't wait any longer. I don't think that makes any sense to draft a class and then let the guy go.
I don't think that was Trent's perspective. I think Trent's perspective was, nah, we
I'm doing.
ride. We ride.
But that's the thing, though, is that you have to, at the end of the day, whether it doesn't matter how much Shad Khan likes Trent Baalke, somebody, you can't like send a signal to NFL coaches that you will just ride with this guy over, any coach that you bring in. That
And there's
just
so
doesn't work. And
no,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
no, there's so much talk too about coaches will be very outspoken about not wanting to work with Trent. I don't think it works that way either. That's why you have representation. You let it be known through your representation that this is the dynamic that you're agreeable to. You don't get into these interviews and go, well, I'll tell you this much, I'm not working with that guy. I mean, it doesn't work that way. So I know some of it can be considered semantics in terms of how you get there. But there is a process that you go through. And I think probably at the end of the day, that's one that, Shad came to that determination as he got through that first round with those 10 or so candidates. And, you know, so now you think about building a staff. What's most important to you, Evan, in terms of building the staff moving forward? Now, Liam's obviously an offensive guy. So do you put your attention more on the defensive side, or, you know, are you still staying on the offensive side of the ball first?
I definitely think you got to nail the DC hire. I mean, that's going to be really, really critical. You know, Cohen has already said that he's going to be calling plays. I'm glad we don't have any questions about that after dealing with.
You didn't think that was fun?
Yeah, no. I'm so tired of that conversation. I hope I never have to have it again. but I think you've got to nail the DC hire. And I think there are some names out there that, you know, you could say would be really interesting in terms of, you know, potential options. I also think, you know, and I think maybe what's most important to Liam, you know, he said, you know, in that press conference, he said the most important thing is getting the offensive line right. So that offensive line hire, that offensive line coach hire better be, you know, really surefire. You know, I know Cohen can do plenty with offensive line himself, but there better be a guy that, you know, is kind of proven in terms of, again, you know, punching above the weight class, because even if the Jaguars go in free agency or in the draft, this upcoming season, this 2025 season, is not going to be the ideal finished product of the offensive line, or really the offense as a whole. You know, you got to give them some time to kind of get this together. But I think those are probably the two most important hires that, you know, he's going to have to make when he comes to, you know, when he, you know, actually gets started. I think one name when you think about DC is Patrick Graham. You know, the Raiders haven't necessarily been good as a team, but you know, whenever you would see them on red zone, they would be losing in a tight game that both teams scored in about the teens. And they play in the AFC West. If you're able to keep the Chargers, the Chiefs to low scoring kind of games.
The Broncos now.
In the Broncos. I like that. I like the idea of that. You know, he was able to get a lot out of those defensive ends in that group. We want to see Trayvon Walker continue producing maybe at an even higher level. We want to see Josh Hines Allen actually make the most of his contract. Who knows? Maybe Eric Armstead can even be redeemed. That's another thing that's interesting. Maybe the defensive line coach is also critical, because I don't know if you noticed in that press conference, but Liam Cohen said, I know we've got three guys on the defensive line that are really talented. I'm curious who he's talking about, because I'm guessing he's saying Trayvon Walker, Josh Hines Allen. Who's the third? Is he talking about Eric Armstead?
I think that's who I think he was referring to. Devon or maybe it was, or maybe Mason Smith.
I'm curious.
As a young guy, I kind of hope that's who he was talking about.
Yeah, that's who I want too, because Mason Smith really started to flash.
Because you're counting on him for maybe the next 8 to 10 years, whereas Armstead maybe another year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, kind of what you were saying, you know, and as he said, lines of scrimmage. So there's that offensive line, that defensive line coach, and DC, obviously. Those are, before I'm hiring anybody else, I want those positions kind of locked down.
DC has got to be better.
Yeah.
Than it was this year. Obviously, I'm kind of in lockstep with you. DC OL coach, I kind of put there together. He alluded to special teams wanting to maintain some continuity, I think, there with that situation. You know, I think even the wide receiver position, you had to be kind of pleased with what you got. Certainly the development of Brian Thomas Jr. in 2024 was a positive. So in terms of retention, I think most of the guys on that Doug Peterson staff either have already been let known that it's not going to continue here, and or they just kind of figured out and are looking to make moves. It is also Senior Bowl week, by the way, which is big for a lot of coaches in the market, making moves, the start of the draft process, getting underway out there in Mobile, Alabama. So, Evan, when we think about this moving forward and getting into the draft process and thinking about Liam Cohen and maybe, you know, hearing from him and thinking, you know, what are some guys that line up for him maybe early in this 2025 NFL draft? Is it still defensive line, even though he talked about three guys that he feels good about? you're not going to probably go interior OL, right, where the Jags are picking, at least in the first round. And then still on defense, though, you know, when you think about the secondary and corner, some of those positions, where's your focus at least early in this process for the upcoming draft?
It's a really tough question because they do have plenty of areas that they could address. And this draft is it's maybe one of the weirdest draft classes in quite some time, just in terms of depth of talent at certain positions compared to others. You know, if they go OL, it may be a little bit of a reach, but I would love Will Campbell out of LSU. I think that would be a really nice pick. If you're going to go that route, he could potentially slide inside or outside, depending on what you think. I also think that if they're going to go, DL, you know, you kind of have to have, a question there, because I wouldn't say that the interior defensive line, especially if you draft high, if you go that in the first round, I mean, there's not a ton of value early in this draft for, DL. Mason Graham from Missouri comes to mind. I know he's already been projected to the Jags once or twice by various publications. But that's going to be a tough one. You know, I mean, I think he's already put the emphasis on the line of scrimmage. We know that there needs to be an emphasis on line of scrimmage. So you think there, but it's a weird spot for those positions this year, especially interior DL. What about you?
Yeah, I'm as much as he talked line of scrimmage, it's hard for me to think they might not go there. You know, what we've heard too about this draft is that it's not exactly loaded with elite top 10, top 15, top 20 guys. But when you get the picks 25, 30 through 60 through the second round, there's potentially a lot of value to be had. It's a deep draft in terms of top two rounds, but it's not deep in terms of elite guys maybe in the top 10. When you look at the quarterbacks in this draft, for example, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward. I mean, I'm seeing Jalen Milroe in some mocks in the top five going to the Giants. I understand there's a lot of quarterback needy teams that are still out there. And that also tells you why you went ahead and got Trevor Dunn when you did, because relative to kind of the situation the Giants find themselves in right now, when they didn't really commit to going to get a Jaden Daniels last time around and stuck with Daniel Jones and let Saquon Barkley go. Boy, you don't want to have that perspective next year, you know, if you're one of these teams, because then I think it puts you in sort of desperation mode, which I think the Giants now are going to be a case in point on that. I think for what this draft presents, you said it, I think they still need help in enough areas that you could almost go just best player available and probably be okay, especially with a Bryce Hunter out there and those type of talents at the different positions. I don't have a problem going with another wide receiver even early.
No, me either.
Because, you know, Christian Kirk, what's his future? Gabe Davis, what's his future? You know, you've got Brian Thomas Jr. as a building block. But beyond that, if you got one of these wide receivers there and you know, you want to go that route again in the first round, I probably wouldn't have much of a problem with it. Kind of flies in the face of physical. But you got to continue to give Trevor the pieces he needs, because as we've seen, he needs help.
Well, and, you know, I mean, you go look at that Buccaneers offense from this past year. Sure, you know, the two running back tandem, if anything, it is a credit to Cohen that, don't get me wrong, Bucky Irving is clearly a very talented player. But Rashad White's kind of stock is free falling since his rookie season. You know, you go look at the wide receiver group. I mean, they in the tight end, Kate Otten. Like, I mean, between Mike Evans and, you know, the rest of that
Chris
group.
Chris Godwin.
I mean, they have a really talented group of receivers. So it makes perfect sense. I mean, I would love, you know, maybe even because if you wanted to get the most possible value, you could trade back three or four spots, maybe to a team that thinks that they could still go get a QB and then still go get like Luther Burden or somebody or McMillan from Arizona. He might be there. And then on the other side, I mean, you could also, like you said, just go corner or, you know, I mean, what's his name? Johnson from Michigan ought to be there. Yeah, I think it's a tough decision because, again, you know, if you, whoever you select in that top five spot, it's kind of like the Trayvon Walker year where it's going to be highlighted, you know, really strongly, but I don't think that there's a lot of guys that you necessarily think of stars in their right. first season, you know, really major impact players. If you can find, like you said, in that best talent available, a guy that can just step in, start, and really make a difference, that'd be awesome. But I do feel like it's probably going to be more of an investment rather than something that's, you know, a pay me now kind of situation.
Yeah, some of these tackles in this draft offensively feel like guys that could be interior guys in the NFL. You brought up Will Campbell, which that might be a little early for him. But someone like that could give you some versatility, too. You might think, hey, Anton Harrison might need to go inside.
Yeah.
Based on this new approach. In fact, when I think of Liam Cohen and running the football and physicality, you know, Anton Harrison might be better served, or maybe not for him from a financial perspective. Right. But, yeah, it could help this team more on the interior because – if you're going to be that type of team, I don't know if Ezra Cleveland's really that guy. And you know the other guard spots you're going to have to address. Morris is long in the tooth. Fortner was a nice player for Cohen at Kentucky, but you know the physicality in his 2 years at center was problematic for him, you know, in terms of that. So major question marks on that interior. Even if the value doesn't say go there in the first round, but like you said, if you trade back, then it makes more sense.
Right.
If you do address maybe one of those positions inside or address the offensive line in a way where, again, it gives you some versatility to do some maybe different things with the guys you got.
No, I think, you know, I think every draft cycle, every NFL fan base talks about trading back or trading up because it's exciting, but you know, typically that's not what happens, right? Very rarely do you actually make, you know, that kind of deal. But I will say there is a part of me that would like love there's a QB needy team that maybe has a plethora of offensive linemen that, you know, veteran proven guys. I, you know, it's rare to see a player traded in the draft trade up process, but I would love that kind of situation where you could move back four or five spots and instead get somebody that is kind of surefire and then also draft OL. Like you could get a guy that, you know, could be ready right now, but also simultaneously get Will Campbell at 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's a dream scenario. I don't think that really is what's going to happen, but it is enticing to think about. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I love that Liam Cohen's very focused on fixing this offensive line, but I feel like there's a lot to fix, you know? I mean, like you said,
I think
like,
you're going to be looking at guard to guard probably.
Yeah, I mean those three guys in the center are like, I don't trust any, you know, any of the current group really right now.
Yeah. I don't know if it aligns either with what he's talking about doing
in
the run game.
Well,
I love what he said though. I love what he said about Mike Evans taking ownership, even in the run game. That's something I got to think about with these wide receivers too. Am I really going to get that out of Christian Kirk? If he stays around, probably not. You know, Brian Thomas Jr., it's more what he's going to have to take on even as your number one moving forward. What does that mean for a guy like Evan Engram at the tight end position?
Yeah.
If physicality is a big part of it, I think you've still got a place for a guy like Evan Engram, but alignment with philosophy and your personnel, you got good players, but you got good players within the scheme moving forward. That's a lot of what's going to be figured out in the next days and months.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you think of when you mentioned Evan Engram, it's like, it's, you know, I could see him like as like basically never lining up next to any of the tackles. You know what I mean? Like if he's still on the team, you know, if Cohen decides to roll with him, you know, you could see a situation where he basically is exclusively used as a really outside blocker. If he is blocking, it's hard to imagine Brian Thomas Jr. I mean, he's got that edge to him. I think he can definitely get that done. It's definitely a skill that you want him to learn, but hard to see him doing it. Hard to see Christian Kirk doing that. You know, it seems like it's Brenton Strange season again. It seems like this is, you know, when I think about Cade Otton,
I think he's a good fit for this offense.
When I think about Cade Otton and that Bucs offense, I think Britton Strange is a like for like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So
it's just crazy, man, because we saw the Bucs here.
Yeah.
Back in the preseason. And it was like, oh, they got a solid little team, you know. Yeah. But this team, Jaguars, this is what a contender looks like.
Yeah, sure, and man.
Boy. Yeah, didn't play out that way, but give Liam Cohen and the Bucs a lot of credit. I think you said something important early on too. A lot of who you are as a football team in terms of the way Cohen's talking about building it, we all default to the lines of scrimmage because we hear physicality, but your quarterback's got to have some crap in his neck too. It doesn't have to be demonstrative or anything like that, but at the moment of truth and when it's on the line, you still got to have that kind of guy behind center. And that's, I think, part of the onus that's going to be put on Trevor moving forward. I don't think Liam Cohen's going to go to Trevor and say, hey, we need you to be really animated, really, you know, vocal. Yeah. You don't want Trevor to try to be something he isn't. But even if you're not that guy, the belief has to be real among your teammates that you can be that guy by example, if it comes down to it. And I think Trevor's tried it at times. I think, you know, Trevor lacks some instincts and things, maybe like Baker Mayfield has some of that. Like he gets absolutely that situational football, some of those things, you know, when to do the things he does with his legs. I'm not sure Trevor is gifted that way. But yeah, the marriage of more so, as you said earlier, intangibly Trevor and this new approach moving forward will be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with Trevor, it's like, yeah, you can't change his personality. You have to roll with what you have there. But it'll be interesting to see because, while, you know, it's not going to be a situation where, because this is a new coach and eventually a new GM coming in, that it's like, well, Trevor, you don't have the weight that you had with the last group. Nah, they paid this dude way too much. He's the franchise quarterback. He's absolutely still going to have plenty of pull when it comes to how things go. Simultaneously, I don't think it's going to be the same as what it was last season or maybe the year before. I think that Liam Cohen's going to say, look, Trevor, this is the offense we're running. Like, you gotta run it. Like, you gotta just do it. And you know, ideally, if that rushing attack is able to work, then they won't have to ask Trevor so crazy much, you know, to force plays or make things happen. But when you think about Baker Mayfield and Trevor, they're almost polar opposites, you know, in terms of quarterback play, in terms of personality, all this different stuff. The reason why Baker Mayfield is a successful NFL quarterback is because of that edge. Because
he was a former walk-on. I mean, he wasn't a five-star.
Yeah.
Trevor was a five-star. You're right.
Yeah. Like this is a situation where a guy was, in Trevor's case, was groomed to be an NFL first overall pick. And with Baker Mayfield, it was a guy who had to
constantly told why he shouldn't be.
Why
he wasn't. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to watch play out. We're just getting into the process, building a staff. As we heard from Shad and others here in the last 24 hours, the GM situation will play out more so over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks or so. Obviously, you'd like to get that handle because you are going through this with Mobile this week. Ethan Waugh, the assistant GM, though, it seems like Shad, in addition to Trent, really has a good relationship with Ethan. So I think there's comfortability there for now anyway, that Ethan can guide them through this process, maybe with Baselli eventually chiming in, helping with that as well. They're not just flying blind now without a GM of any kind. Ethan Waugh is a guy that's seasoned to this stuff and can hold down the fort for now, so to speak, until you get some more permanent things figured out for the future. Anything else, Eb, before we get out of here?
No, I was just going to tack on that Shad did say that the GM search has to be completed by the end of February. I don't love that he brought up the deadline rather than his own kind of timeline.
That means on the 27th, we'll have an announcement.
Guys, interview's popping. Yeah, dude. Like, I don't love procrastination. I'm not saying that that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But that did make me wonder a little bit if we're going to, you know, maybe this is going to be a slower process than maybe you would like. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as they get a guy that, you know, works, then that's fine. So that's all I wanted to add on.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, does Cohen have input on that too?
Yeah.
And I think there is at least a sense of security for now with Ethan Waugh and Tebow and Tony Baselli and, you know, kind of the dynamic being what it is. But I hear you. I think there are a lot of Jaguar fans that are still a little anxious.
Absolutely.
About the whole GM thing after the last few years. Well, Ev, it's great catching up, man. We'll do it again soon as we get into the draft process, more of the things that become available to us where the GM is concerned. A lot of stuff coming up here on it's the Jacksonville exciting. Jaguars front. Yeah, I think, you know, the fan base is excited. I'll tell you who's excited is the season ticket sellers
for
the Jaguars. I mean, oof, they talk about a rough situation for some folks. They got a little daylight. You know, they got a little sunlight on them here in the last week or so, I think.
Absolutely. I think if you rolled with Balky, even like, or, you know, forget rolling with Doug for another season. We all knew that was going to happen. But I think there would have been a lot of, if you remember the clown protests, I think we could have been heading for that kind of thing again if Balky was the GM next season. So I think people will be a lot more likely to say, well, you know, yeah, all right, we're giving it a fresh go. So, yeah, fingers crossed that the next month or so goes well before free agency gets started.
There you go. Evan, as always, enjoyed it. We'll do it again soon. And also, thank you for tuning in here on the Ryer On YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed to our channel as of yet, hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to our content as it drops here on the channel. And if you would give us a like, a thumbs up, we would greatly appreciate that as well. For Evan, I'm Travis. Thanks again. And until next time, so long, everybody.